Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello, everybody. You're very welcome to the Farmers Journal Podcast. I'm joined this week by my colleagues, Aidan Brennan and Declan O'Brien. Aidan, the nitrates proposals, the nitrates action proposal for 2022, caused a lot of consternation among farmers. And as more detail comes out, there's mixed news this week. There's some comfort, but around the combined storage of soiled dirty waters and slurry, but there's some bad news as well around slurry capacity and storage capacity requirements. Isn't that true?
Yeah, well, it's uncertainty, I suppose, more so at the moment, passing bad news. So what Bernard Harris from the Nitrates Division in the Department of Ag announced at the department's webinar on Monday last was about a review of the tables in the nitrates directive legislation, which kind of governs how much excrement or manure or slurry a cow produces over, or an animal produces over the for each week of the year. And so currently a dairy cow in Ireland is 0.33 of a cubic meter per week, and they're going to review that. And I suppose the outcome of that review will then depend whether farmers have sufficient slurry storage or not. Now I'm sure there'll be a lead in time if any changes are made to that, but it's just another little string to the bow of pressure coming on farms in order to have sufficient storage. You're right in what you said. There was a glimmer of good news in relation to the soil water being separate from slurry rule, but that's only dependent on the fact that if you have enough storage for both soil water and slurry. And while Jack Nolan from the department said that, you know, once you have 4 weeks of storage for soil water and enough storage then for slurry, whatever the requirement is for what zone you're in, you'll be okay. But the only thing to bear in mind in that is that when soil water and slurry mixes, it's actually considered slurry. So now you need, you know, 16 to 22 weeks of storage for all that material, not just the 4 weeks for soiled water. So look, there's a lot to be played here yet, Pat, I have to say. Consultation is still open. It's closing the 20th of September. The nitrates expert group then, which is made up of people from the Department of Agriculture, Department of Housing, Chagas and the EPA, will then go away and decide what's going to be in and what's not going to be in.
And in terms of the assessed level of excretion of organic slurry from cows and the review of that, is that not a constant around Europe? Why are they looking at it, maybe reviewing it upwards?
Well, so they could review it downwards as well. It's a review, so they haven't deliberately said it's going to be up. But I suppose if you look at what's happening elsewhere, like in Northern Ireland, up the road, they have, their figure is about 12% higher than ours are. And if you look to Denmark, it's much higher, it's about 35% higher. Now, there is a difference in the type of cows we have. And in fairness to the department, they have said it's a review. And the question, I suppose, they're asking is, the figures we have currently were set in the 1970s, and have cow numbers changed, the type of cow we have in Ireland, has that changed in the meantime? You know, both the dairy cow and the beef animal. And I suppose if you have to say that the animal has changed. Look, slurry excretion rate, it's a direct link to how much feed animals consume, and also how much output they're doing. So, you know, it's product in, product out. And I look, personally, Pat, I would say it's going to increase. You know, they're not reviewing it for the sake of it. It's going to be some increase. What that is, I'm not sure. And how, what the implications of that will be for your typical farmer, I'm not sure either. And remember, like, it's all farmers will be implicated by this, not just those in irrigation.
But and I suppose the one thing that we should feel confident about is that the ability to assess, rather than taking levels based on theory, the ability to properly collate statistics around animal excretion and the measurement has improved exponentially in those decades. So the figures that they come up with should be realistic, and at least that gives dairy and cattle farmers the knowledge that the figures that have been presented are solid, and that, you know, the part we need to play around carbon output and methane levels, that whole picture is being augmented by the fact that there's a real assessment and a real understanding of the excretion levels from these animals, and of the necessity to deal with that slurry in a responsible way.
Yeah, definitely. Now, there have been some questions asked as to how are the department going to get these figures between now and December. So that's when they've said that they're going announcing the results of the review for slurry. And like, unless you put an animal into a chamber and measure her output, it's going to be difficult to get that. Now, there is modelling, you could model that based on what the average cow eats and what the average cow produces in terms of milk and meat, and then do a formula, get a formula to work out how much it loses through he loses through the back end. But it's going to happen. The change is going to come. It's about how much of a change is going to be and what impact it's going to have. And it's important to remember as well, though, Pat, we're not all lower. So in terms of Northern Ireland, some of our younger stock, so animals 1 to 2 years of age, are actually lower than what Northern Ireland has, which is important to point out as well.
Great stuff, Aidan. And of course, you'll be keeping us all updated every week as this story evolves through the rest of the year. And next, I move to Declan O'Brien. Declan, there's been a lot of talk in the UK about worker shortages. Brexit's being blamed for a lot of it, and the change in Britain's immigration policies. But you've identified this week that there are significant issues around labour supply and labour shortages in our own country here and in our own sector.
Yes, well, there's two stories this week that have an impact, that have a labour factor in them at the heart of the stories. One has to do with the supply of pigs to Northern Ireland, to the Carrow plant in County Tyrone. That plant is reported to be short on butchering staff, not so much the killing lines, but the processing lines thereafter. Now, Carrow didn't comment on that actual story to us when we approached them. But a number of farmers who are supplying pigs to the company have been badly affected. The Roy Galley from the IFA estimates that up to 5,000 pigs a week could be backing up on farms, and that this situation is getting worse rather than getting better. He's claiming that if these pigs go over live weight, go over 120 kilos, you're looking at a potential loss of €100 per pig, which says that, well, if you extrapolate that figure out to 5,000 pigs a week, that's 500,000 a week being lost by the industry. It's not a huge number of farmers impacted. It could be less than 15. But those that are being impacted are being impacted seriously. So that was the first example of the problems. The second example is we were just looking at the how in Britain the transport sector has been adversely affected by what's going on in terms of labour shortages, and could Ireland sector be equally exposed? Verona Murphy, the Wexford TD, estimates that already that there are 1,000 vacancies. She's saying that there are a lot of trucks parked up because the transport companies don't have drivers for them. The contacts that we made to haulage companies acting in the farm sector indicated that they will struggle to while they're okay at the moment, they will struggle if it becomes a if they start losing drivers, and drivers are being poached already. There's talk of a lot higher wages being paid for fellas to move and women to move. But they're saying as well that they would be exposed because of the added range of jobs that the drivers in the farm sector are expected to do. You know, that the lads will have to have a license for a Moffat, that in many cases to get stuff off the trucks. They'll also, they'd have to do the, be able to work the feed blowers. They're not just simply working out of big distribution centres. They're working in and out of tight, very tight farmyards. It's a different type of driver that is needed. It's a driver as well that can go into the yard, hop ball and have a bit of crack with the farmer. You know, and he's nearly a representative for the company as well as being a driver in many instances, you know. So they really feel vulnerable there. And as one man said, he likened his company to the Catholic Church. He said there are, and to the supply of priests, he said, by their very nature, he said, truck drivers are an elderly cohort of the population. It's very hard to get young lads to come into the industry, and that isn't helped by the quotes that the insurance companies are firing at these firms.
And of course, Verona Murphy would be well versed in this area, being a former president of the Road Haulers Association. Is anyone coming up with any proposals to solve this problem or nip it in the bud, or are we looking at a worsening situation?
Well, Verona Murphy is saying the government, she's saying the government has to act, and she's, her comments are echoed by the current incumbent in that position, Eugene Drennan. And he's calling for a streamlining of the procedures to bring in drivers from abroad. He said, if we can streamline those procedures, he said, they're far too complicated at the moment. And he also said that there's too many arms of the state involved. He says, you've got the Department of Transport, you've got the Department of Enterprise, you've got the RSA, you've got the NDLS. He said, all of these have input into getting a driver from, you source the driver, to him actually getting into the cab of the truck and driving out the gate. He said, it is too long a process, and that this needs to be streamlined. And if it isn't streamlined, and he also called for a bit of urgency from the government on this. He said, there is an opportunity now to prevent it getting to a situation like the UK is in.
Of course, the danger.
We're not there yet. We needn't get there.
Thanks, Declan.
I know, Pat, that you've been doing a lot of cap modelling yourself on the, you know, where the new cap is going to take us. And where has that brought you this week?
It's brought me into a finisher's yard. So these case studies we're doing are fictitious, but the figures are real, in that what we're doing is we're taking the amount of money they would have drawn down in the reference years of 2000 to 2002. And we're bringing them right through the Cholos reforms and through the current proposed reforms to 2026. So it's a real life situation of a fictitious farm. And the assumption we're making is that the farmer has not changed his practice. And an awful lot of Irish farms have changed what they're doing, but a huge amount of them are still doing exactly what they were doing, or very close to what they were doing 20 years ago during the reference years. So this farmer, Tommy Kelly, he was an intensive finisher, I suppose, finishing 200 cattle on 50 hectares. 90 of those cattle were being brought in with clean ears. That means that they had no subs drawn out of the 9 or 22 months premium back in the day. So he would draw both those premium down, then finish the cattle, sell them to factory and claim the slaughter premium, and would also gain the extensifications. Because you only had a limit on a herd of 90 special beef premium, he had now maxed out on those premiums. So the other 110 cattle he bought in, heifers and steers, had been subbed out. In other words, there were no premium available on them, and the only payments he got on those were the slaughter premiums. Having said that, he still built up a massive payment, relatively speaking, of €46,600 per hectare. And that led to a payment of over €900, €932 per hectare, actually, in 2005 when the payments came in. So we've tracked him right through. The Cholos reforms would have substantially cut his payment from about €45,500 in 2014. There had been a few budget cuts which had impacted on all farmers, taking a couple of percent off the payment. But the Cholos reforms took over 10,000 off. In 2021, where we find him now, he's at 34,650. And the combination of the proposals at the moment of front loading Chris, which will take 5% of the budget of his payment away, which 5% of that 26,000, and only give him back 660. And then you have the Euro scheme, so they're taking 25% of his money away, so that's 6,500 taken away, and he gets €64 a hectare back, so he's only getting about 3,500 back, 3,250 back. And then finally we have the reduced basic payment, now called the BIS, and when we add all that together, in 2026, he's going to be down to €20,360, much less than half of what he had in the reference years. And the question to be asked here, it's not about the rights and wrongs. This is what's going to happen unless the politics of the situation changes. And the question to ask is, if this happens, what will be the effect at ringside? Because these finishers are the people who buy cattle, they buy forward stores, they buy yearlings. In some cases, they buy weanlings. And if those farmers, if their buying power is reduced, what effect will that have on prices? And that tale is still to be told. Next, we go to the Cooley Peninsula in Louth. The Cooley Peninsula Sheep Breeders Association had their annual sale.
So I'm joined here by Jerry McEnany from the Cooley Sheep Breeders Association. Jerry, I suppose it's hard to describe the setting here for people who are listening. On one side of the road, you have Carlingford Lock, and on the other side of the road, on any normal day of the week, you'd have about a 5 or 6 acre field, but today it's been totally transformed. Tell me a bit about it.
Yeah, today it's probably the only one day sale in the country. Landed here yesterday at Dernerton and transformed the field into 400 pens and a ring and set up for a sale to have 3,800 sheep. And look, at tomorrow at Dernerton it'll be back to normal. There'll be sheep back in the field Sunday evening, I'd say, for Ian Woods, the man that owns the field.
It's a massive undertaking, Jerry, and like, it's not something that you take lightly, but it's a huge, I won't say community effort, because it's a huge Cooley effort.
Huge effort for me, all the locals. Like, we were here this morning, the first batch of sheep probably came in around 5 o'clock, and there was 4,000 sheep penned, all voluntary, at just before 9 o'clock. And you wouldn't see it anywhere else. Even the farmers coming in, they have to be congratulated too, and the way they presented the stock. We had no bother handling it. They were just all separated, and the trailers very easy. And the men know what they're at and how to present them that day, like in the batch of 10 or whatever it is. And everyone was great this morning. Like, it was just, we were very worried that we wouldn't have the time to get them set up for half 10. We were finished at 9 o'clock.
It's all really, I suppose, Jerry, about the weather too, that you are a bit exposed to it, given you're so close to the lock, but today has been a belter.
Yeah, many's the day you'd be here and the spray of water coming or been blown in off the tide on top of you, and then you wouldn't know whether it was raining or. But today is a great day, a great weather-wise, it's a great day, so we couldn't ask for any better. I think there's a bit of rain maybe coming tomorrow evening, but no, we're very happy with the weather and the way things turned out so far.
We're about halfway through the sale, Gerry, and I suppose, look, at breeding sales this year haven't maybe hit the highs that everyone would have expected with the lamb trade, but you'd have to say a good honest trade there.
A good honest trade, yeah, good stocks making good money, and that's the way it is, and probably the way it is all over the country. We're talking to customers down the ring, down the places, they were all saying, like, there's some great hoggers here, and there's good value in them too, you know what I mean? That they weren't overly priced, but they were well paid for them. Good sheep was a good trade, is a good trade.
This year is a special year as well, 20 years on from foot and mouth. It's, I suppose, testament to the farmers, testament to the group. How many farmers are in the group, Gerry?
There's about 120 booked in at the minute. Now maybe there might be 110 or so showing stock here today. And look at 20 years ago, if you had to tell us there would have been a sale here, there were 4,000 sheep. You would have laughed at it, you know. So it's a great bunch of men of the farmers, and all rode in behind it, and it turned out it's a great success this last 10 or 11 years. It's a great outlet for the breeding sheep in the area, which mostly. You would have been taking them to, like, travelling to maybe Cairn or Ross or further on down the road to try and to get a market for your sheep. But no, it's a sale every year, and every farmer, they're set up for it now every year, and that's the way it works.
Well, Gerry, hopefully in 20 years' time you'll still be going strong. And judging by today, the one thing that I'm taking is, even from the young people bringing the sheep to the pens, you have a great young effort.
Yeah, there's a great, like, here this morning, there was a great, 24 or 25 young fellas down the lanes there, getting the sheep penned, and you couldn't work without them, you know what I mean? Like, and it's great to see them, and a lot of them have sheep here today, and I hope they get well paid for them, and it gives them a wee bit of a lift, that they'll maybe buy a couple of pens of ewe lambs or whatever, that to keep the thing going.
Thank you, Gerry. So I'm joined now by Hugh Rooney from Chagas. Hugh was integral to setting up the sheep sale 11 years ago. Hugh, when you were setting up, I suppose, in your inaugural sale, did you ever think that you'd have 4,000 sheep 11 years later?
Not at all, Darren. We think we did maybe 1,100 at the first sale, and today now we've almost 4,000. So it's been a huge success story for the whole Cooley Peninsula. It's great to see such vigour and interest again in sheep farming, and particularly hill sheep farming, because in some parts of the country it's under pressure, and there's not enough sheep on some of the hills around the country. And another big success is that all the young shepherds we have, young boys and girls that are showing sheep here today, this is their 11th sale, and they were helping out back in the early days, and now they're showing their own sheep. So it's really bringing on the next generation, and we're confident that the future is going to be successful and secure here in Cooley Peninsula.
It's been a long journey, Hugh, when you also think that 20 years ago this area would have been really decimated from say sheep farming. Farmers are probably up to the same numbers and even maybe ahead of where they were 20 years ago now.
They are, yeah. Like 20 years ago, unfortunately, there wasn't one sheep to be found on the peninsula. And, you know, it took a good number of years to get stock back to the hills. The hills weren't, or the sheep weren't used to the sheep to the hills when they came back. There was problems with, you know, looping ill and different diseases, but the sheep accustomized and acclimatized over time, and yeah, now the numbers are back up, and they're ahead of what they would have been back then. All right.
There's no one person responsible for it. Obviously, the farmers have, say, had to increase numbers. The optimism and drive is there to do it. But for a sale like this, you were involved at the beginning, but you were saying the Department of Agriculture also had a huge role.
Yeah, well, this couldn't be run without an official MART licence from the Department of Agriculture, and the department in Meath, Jim McCartan and his team of vets have been integral in the success of this sale. They've been with us all the way and supportive of it, just making sure everything is done to the rules and regulations.
You mentioned just, say, young people there. It's something we bemoan, is that there isn't young people getting involved in agriculture, but you do see sales like this or producer groups, they're really a catalyst to keep or to harness that energy.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just given the whole thing a buzz now, and people are picking rams now 6 months before they even need them. They're trying to improve for next year, and the quality is improving year after year. There's a lot of prizes given out there today, and there's special prizes for young shepherds, and it's just to give them encouragement and give them, you know, the green light to keep going and improve themselves.
Thanks, Hugh. We'll catch up and maybe visit some of the farms in the future.
And finally, we talked to IFAC's head of agribusiness and food. That's David Layden, formerly of this parish. And David is discussing the report that IFAC have commissioned into and completed into food and agribusiness. So, David, take it away.
I'm joined by David Layden, who is head of food and agribusiness on IFAC, and it's on the occasion of the launch of their food and agribusiness report. David, what are the big issues this year?
Okay, Phelim, so this is the fourth annual report that we've done. It's really a sentiment tracker of the SME sector. So food and agribusinesses, not your Glanbia's, Kerry's, ABP's, it's very much focused on SMEs. Again, this is the fourth annual tracker, and it's there to find out what's really happening in that SME sector. So OEMs, vets, food producers, farmers that have gone into producing yogurts, that type of thing, merchants. So that's the cohort that this is aimed at, and that's who we have researched with Imoric, with Imoric Research. So what are the big issues? Well, anyone that's, you know, bought machinery, built a shed, has seen that costs have increased this year, and that has happened for all the agribusinesses. You know, costs have increased. The other big one will be around recruitment. You know, for the last couple of years, it's been very positive around recruitment. 98% intend to maintain or grow employee numbers. But again, two thirds of them, and this will be familiar for anyone that's employing people at the moment, are having difficulty recruiting. So they're two of the big issues that stand out at the moment. But the big focus this year was ESG, environment, social and governance. That's the big focus this year.
I'm just going to pick you up on one of those there, David, the issue of labour. Certainly, I know the larger food processing business in the country, in dairy and meat, etc., are having huge problems. How would you assess it is in the small and medium enterprises, as they are, to give them their the SMEs, as they're referred to?
So, Phelim, it's very much across the whole spectrum of any team that a company needs. So we're seeing it with production staff. So a bit like the larger organizations, you know, these food producers have production staff. There is a challenge there. For some of the machinery manufacturers that we work with, welders are a big problem. Welders are, you know, very hard to find. In certain parts of the country where there's a lot of manufacturing going on, welders are moving from business to business and commanding higher hourly rates the whole time. So welders are definitely an issue. But then you go into, we'll say, the office part of the SME, and you're seeing real problems finding finance professionals to work in the organization, problems with marketing and international sales as well. But if I was to summarize it, I'd say production, welding and finance are probably three areas that we're seeing a particular pinch point.
Something else that caught me eye in the SME sector that this report covers, 86% of sales are domestically within Ireland. It's not a particularly export focused sector, and yet I've also noted that businesses would say that Brexit has impacted on them. Can you just elaborate a little bit there, David? How it has impacted, even though, as I say, the vast majority of their trade is conducted internally.
Okay, so you're right, Phelim, like 86% of turnover in these businesses is coming from the Republic of Ireland. But 55% of them, so 5 in 10 broadly, have exposure to export markets. So there is a certain level of export in these organisations, and that's where Brexit has caused.
Right, so yes, a lot of them, in other words, more than half of them do a little bit of exporting. And of course, Brexit won't make it any easier for them and maybe make them even less inclined to export in future.
It would. And I'll give you two examples of stuff that has happened recently that we've seen. So packaging is a big thing for any SME, right? So even for merchants in the country, an awful lot of their packaging for meal bags, say the normal 25 kg meal bag that you might see, that all comes from the UK. For certain egg producers, the cardboard that you stick the egg into, that comes from the UK. And even during COVID there was incidents where, you know, the cardboard ran out and they ended up using plastic. So you've those issues with, you know, trying to find alternative suppliers to your UK supplier. You have the issue with the land bridge. So think about if you're an exporting a food product to the continent, the land bridge was quick over on the boat, down through GB and across to France. That's no longer a simple process. There's a lot more bureaucracy there, and it's slowing down delivery times. And I think we've heard a lot about those transport issues, and those transport issues are definitely causing challenges.
You mentioned at the start of our conversation just about the whole sustainability piece. It has become a major issue in farming over the past year. It has been there for a prolonged period, but there's really, really getting an ever-increasing focus on it. Is it something that people in smaller businesses, do they take that seriously, or is it something that they haven't really got into yet? You know, it doesn't really apply to us. Is that where do they sit exactly, David?
Yeah, so our sense of it is that is not the attitude. The attitude is that sustainability does matter and it is impacting on us. So we've seen that 87% of the businesses that we surveyed are taking climate action. And so what are those climate actions? You know, managing waste and byproducts, that's big. Like, you know, 80% are trying to do that. And that makes sense, Phelan, from a sustainability perspective, but also from a business perspective, a commercial perspective. If you can reduce your waste, you know, you'll generate more revenue for yourself. They're purchasing sustainable packaging and trying to reduce the use of plastic. They know that the consumer wants plastic reduced at some level.
They are switched on then, that's what you're saying.
They're choosing environmentally conscious suppliers and they're investing in energy saving initiatives. You know, think about the solar panels. You know, they have a great resource, big factories, big sheds, they're made for solar panels. And we're seeing quite a lot of activity in that area. The other little bit that we are seeing, so, you know, when we talk about ESG, that's been knocking about the investment community for a decade, the BlackRocks, the Mundys of this world. It's now filtered into like PLC world for the last couple of years. And now it's filtering down to SMEs. And that's why we focused on ESG for this report, because SMEs need to get their thinking around the language of ESG, around what does it actually mean. And it's not just environmental sustainability, it's also social sustainability, how you treat staff, diversity, inclusion, human rights, impact on the local community. So these things, and then governance, obviously, in terms of board structures, advisory board structures, this stuff is becoming more important. And, you know, the customer is going to judge you on your ESG credentials. They mightn't use that language, but they're judging you in a way on that. The banker is going to judge you on your ESG credentials because they have to have a balance between green and brown loans. And I suppose the final thing is in the supply chain, if you're supplying into bigger organizations, they're writing nice 100-page glossy ESG reports every year. They're putting pressure on SMEs to meet their ESG criteria so they can include that in the report. So it's going to have a commercial impact, and I think we want our SMEs to be
it's clearly very much there, and the fact that it's probably been the largest single segment of this conversation, David, I think reflects that as well. We leave it there for now, and there's a full report on in this week's Irish Farmers Journal in the agribusiness section, so both in print and online you will see further information on the report. Thanks very much, David.
And that concludes our podcast for this week. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Don't forget to listen to our parallel podcast where Andy Dawes, Stephen Robb and Siobhan Walsh, our tillage team, discuss the harvest. It's been a big hit. It's been a fantastic harvest, and they've more new good news this week as prices continue to rise. So a great year for the tillage sector, and our tillage podcast as the harvest draws to a close is a must listen. Take care and see you next week.